read from Psalm 85, and verse 10, the first part of the verse said, "Mercy and truth have met together." What's the relationship between these two words, mercy and truth? And in some study this year, the regularity at which those two words are paired together came to my attention. They're found often side by side, but about 33 times in the Old Testament, they're found within the same verse. And so that led me to wonder, well, what's the connection between these two? They're not really synonymous. They're not opposites. It's not a contrast. So why are these two words, several times, as we'll notice this morning, put together? There's nothing really unique in the sense that they're not alone of important things that we need to learn. We could equally see value in words like justice and love, even hate from God's standpoint, and goodness and severity and wisdom. These are all things that are attributed to God that many people don't rightfully consider. But what is it about these two words that not only are fitting of God, but that are fitting of God when they're paired together? And then what application do these words need to have in our lives? That's what we're going to look at this morning and then continue and complete this study this evening. I want to spend a few minutes looking at the definition of these words, not because they're necessarily highly technical, but just because, as is often the case in English, you look up an English word in the dictionary, well, it has its maybe primary meaning and then some secondary meanings, or it might mean equally two or three or more different things. And so that's not unique to English. Remember that the Old Testament was written in the language called the Hebrew language. So Hebrew words have that same diversity sometimes in the different words that are used. So the word mercy, I'm not going to give you the whole, it'd be two or three lines long, all the different words that this Old Testament word, often translated mercy, can be. But mercy can sometimes mean kindness or loving kindness. So that's a little more general than mercy. Truth, what I read, mainly means stability. And with that meaning, then it can mean truth. We understand the stability of truth. It can mean trustworthiness or faithfulness. Again, that confidence you can have in that which is constant and consistent. Here, depending on the translation that you use, the same word, the same Hebrew word, may be translated a few different ways. And so you'll notice that as we read a number of verses this morning. Often the New King James will use the word mercy and truth. The English Standard Version will, though, give this shade of meaning, steadfast love and faithfulness. It isn't really a different idea. It's all these meanings come from the same word. The NIV, in some of the passages we'll read, where the New King James may say mercy and truth, that's what I primarily teach from and read from. The NIV will say love and faithfulness. There's a translation called the New English Translation, and it will use the word loyal love and faithfulness. And then the New American Standard says loving kindness and truth. So you can see there's no contradiction here. It's just some shades, different shades of meaning of the same words. That happens in Hebrew, that happens in English. And so we have the same challenge sometimes when we study. And it's also important to have our confidence that you don't have to be a Hebrew scholar. I'm not, to understand the Bible. The Bible is a book of words. And really, more often than we look up a word in a dictionary, we do that from time to time. It's helpful to have those tools. But context, that's what we use in day-to-day speech. When we talk to each other, we use words that could mean multiple things. How do we know which one of those seven definitions someone means? It's often somewhat automatic. It just depends on the topic being discussed. And so we'll see that also as we study this morning. First, I want to look at a few occasions where these words mercy or loving kindness and truth or faithfulness appear together. And first, just notice that they are mentioned in the context of man. In Genesis chapter 24, this is where Abraham has sent his servant out to find a wife for his son Isaac. And so this servant comes to some of Abraham's extended family, and meets Rebekah. And in verse 24, as he meets her, and then later as he's visiting her father and has presented the plan that she might come back with him and marry his master's son, is part of that presentation is, "Now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, with Abraham, tell me. And if not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left." So will you let Rebekah come back and be Isaac's wife or not? Deal with me, just be upfront with me, deal with me kindly and truly. So that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Then turn to the book of Proverbs and read with me these three verses that show the importance of mercy and truth, of kindness or loving kindness and faithfulness. That this is a part of what the theme of the book of Proverbs and wisdom, that to those who seek to understand and to live by the wisdom presented in this book that is from God, that mercy and truth are a part of that. Proverbs 3, verses 3 and 4. "Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the table of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man." So, you know, why these two words? As Solomon doesn't try to list everything that his son needs to know, what is it about mercy and truth and then the combination of mercy and truth that he says, "Son, as you go out, these are the things that you need to keep in your heart. You keep them so close to you that they're like a necklace around your neck, that wherever you go, it goes with you because you won't leave your head. And so you put it around your neck and they will be with you wherever you go. Write it on the tablet of your heart." Does that remind you of Deuteronomy 6, where, "Hear Israel, the Lord your God is one, and these words shall be in your heart"? Same kind of language, the same kind of emphasis. That's how important these are. Go over to chapter 14. Chapter 14, let's read verses 21 and 22. "He who despises his neighbor sins, but he who has mercy on the poor, happy is he. Do they not go astray who devise evil? But mercy and truth belong to those who devise good." So everybody might say, to some degree, well, even the worst of people have their moments where they show some degree of kindness and faithfulness, maybe faithful to their evil cause and to their evil associates. But what this is reminding us of is that the kind of mercy and truth that Solomon is writing about doesn't happen by accident, and it doesn't even happen by living in a culture and a society that maybe views these as important, valuable values and habits. That these are the product, these are the results of those who devise good, who plan good. The kind of mercy and truth being described here are the result of attention to what God has said, and attention to other people, as he says in verse 2, having mercy on the poor. That means knowing the needs of others around us, being aware that we're not on an island, that there are other people around us. And so I devise a plan. I have a plan to do good, and the fruit of that is mercy and truth, loving kindness and faithfulness. And so this ought to be demonstrated in our lives on a daily basis. This ought to be demonstrated in our home, seen in our home, heard in our home, towards our parents, towards our children, towards our spouses. This needs to be present. It needs to be present among Christians and as we work together, loving kindness and faithfulness. And then look at chapter 20 of Proverbs and verse 28. "If these things are bound around our neck, then they're present everywhere we go." And notice here, even they're important for the king. Mercy and truth preserve the king, and by loving kindness, he upholds his throne. So we don't think much about kings, but we know why Solomon did. And so we think about leadership, really, especially in the book of Proverbs. Any passage that talks about a king, it's relating some principle of leadership. And so what makes a strong leader? We've heard about that over the past few months, and people certainly have a variety of ideas about that. But boy, for a leader of a nation or of a state or of a city or of a home, for a leader among God's people who says, my platform is, among other things, loving kindness and faithfulness, mercy and truth. How important is that to an economy? How important is that to the budget of a home and the conduct of those in the home? Well, this says, especially in regards to those who are leading in those areas, mercy and truth is essential for the preservation of a king. In Hosea chapter 4 and verse 1, the prophet says, hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. Again, as I just started noticing there in Genesis and in Psalms, Proverbs, and then here in Hosea, again, these words truth and mercy are together. Why is that? Why is it as God looked at Israel, out of all of the corruptions that we can read about in Samuel and Kings and Chronicles, that when he saw what was happening, the way he summarized what was void, what was missing, was all your problems can be summarized by there's a lack of mercy and truth. There's a lack of loving kindness and a lack of faithfulness in the land. And then notice that that's tied into a lack of the knowledge of God. A failure to have and to keep the knowledge of God is going to lead to a lack of mercy and truth. And so it's used to describe man that it was what the servant of Abraham appealed to. It's mentioned in the context of wisdom. And then it's mentioned as essential and associated with a knowledge of God. And so that takes us really that back to God. Mercy and truth comes from God. And so let's notice the verses that emphasize that. In Exodus 34, when Moses, he's been given the commandments and the covenant to share with Israel. And Moses, remember, makes the request, well, God, let me see your face. And he isn't shown the face of God, but God passes by. And when God passed by him, here's what God said about himself. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abounding in goodness and truth. So here the words aren't side by side, but they're both in this verse where, you know, what would you say about yourself? You meet someone maybe new and they say, well, tell me about yourself. Well, what are the first things you're going to say? Well, they're going to be some of the most important things that you value and that you would want others to know are of importance to you. And how long could God have gone on telling Moses about who he is? Could have said many things, but in just a few words, mercy and truth are on that short list of how God identifies himself to Moses, who already knew God to some degree, but he wanted to know God better. And this is part of the way that God says, this is, if you're going to know me well, if you want to know me deeply, here's a part of what that involves, and among other things, it includes mercy and truth. Next, I want to go through and I'm going to read all these verses, and so I won't be making a lot of comments on them, but I just want to impress upon you, as it jumped out at me, how often these words are found and found in the context of who God is. I'm going to read most of these from the New King James. But as I get to the latter half of them, I'll have the verses on the charts, and I'll read from a few other translations, just that you might compare what translation you use with these, and just helps to give us maybe a fuller understanding of what God is telling us when he tells us about mercy and truth of himself. Let me start in Genesis 24. So this is the same occasion that we were reading from earlier, the servant going out to find a wife for Isaac. And so when he meets Rebekah at the well, and he becomes convinced that she is the one, he says in verse 27, he says, "Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth towards my master." And so God had made these promises to Abraham. For those promises to happen, Isaac needs a wife. And now when he believes he's found the wife that is the fulfillment of what God had promised, he's saying God has been kind, God has been faithful to his word. And his gratitude is expressed in that way. In Genesis 32 and verse 10, as Jacob prepares to meet Esau after a long time since they had been together because of Jacob's deceit in taking the blessing as well as the birthright. And so he's fearful about what's going to happen. And so he prays to God on the evening of that meeting. And in verse 10, he says, "I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown to your servant." And here, I don't think he means only, "Well, God, you've taught me the things that are true, but God, you've shown your loving kindness and your mercy." And that was certainly true of Jacob up to this point, wasn't it? Then also, God had been true, God had been faithful. And I believe Jacob is looking back over his life, and now he's sobered up quite a bit, and he's seeing the faithfulness of God in contrast to himself, who had been a deceiver and far from faithful to his own words. And so that being a part of who God was even understood by the fathers, the patriarchs in the book of Genesis. Now go to Psalms. The first few verses I'll read from the New King James. And so I'll just read from my Bible, and then I'll have a few of the verses in a moment displayed. Psalm 25, verse 10. "All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth to such as keep his covenant and his testimonies." So again, I won't make a lot of comments here, but just notice how often these words are paired together. Psalm 40, verses 10 and 11. "I have not hidden your righteousness within my heart. I have declared your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness and your truth from the great assembly. Do not withhold your tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let your loving kindness and your truth continually preserve me." Psalm 57, verse 3. I'll go back to verse 2. "I will cry out to God Most High, to God who performs all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save me. He reproaches the one who would swallow me up, Selah. God shall send forth his mercy and his truth." In these verses, just think about what all the different words he could have chosen as he thinks about God will save me, preserve me, provide for me, and how often he chooses God's mercy and truth, or his loving kindness and his faithfulness. Psalm 69, verse 13. 12 and 13. "Those who sit in the gate speak against me, and I am the song of the drunkards. But as for me, my prayer is to you, O Lord, in the acceptable time. O God, in the multitude of your mercy, hear me in the truth of your salvation." And then now I'll read from some other versions. First from the English Standard Version. And I'll give you just a moment. If you want to follow along in your own Bible to compare, then you can do so. But Psalm 69:13. "But as for me," well, that's just the one that's what I just read, isn't it? I had it wrongly noted. So let me just skip to the next one then. Psalm 85, verse 10, which we read from earlier, where the New King James said, "Mercy and truth meet." Here it reads that steadfast love and faithfulness meet. Righteousness and peace kiss each other. Psalm 86, 15. "But you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, mercy and truth. The New American Standard, Psalm 89:14, righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Loving kindness and truth go before you. So again, compare that with what you usually read from. Psalm 105, if you turn here, mark this, because we'll come back to Psalm 100 in a few minutes. For now, though, I'll just read verse 5. For the Lord is good, His loving kindness is everlasting, and His faithfulness to all generations. Psalm 108 and verse 4. For your loving kindness is great above the heavens, and your truth reaches to the skies. And then one more, Psalm 115, verse 1. Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name give glory because of your loving kindness, because of your truth. So clearly it's important, it is essential that we not overlook, that we not neglect this aspect of who God is as He tells us of Himself. And as especially the psalmist recognizes these things and praises God for His mercy and truth, and these songs and these prayers, these are things that are worth including, and they often are. Several of you, as you begin your prayer, refer to God as a merciful God. And so that's what He has told him of Himself. One other, Proverbs 16 and verse 6. We read a few other proverbs where this mercy and truth were urged upon us, but here, in mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity. And by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. Among the greatest blessings of the mercy and truth of God that are mentioned here is atonement, is forgiveness. In Israel, atonement was, of course, bringing a valuable, pure male lamb to be sacrificed, or sometimes some other animal, but as a payment for their sin. And so that was the will of God. That was the revelation of God. And so there was no way, the Jews were reminded, there's no way that we could provide a payment for our own sin. Here's what God has told us to do. And so it was God's mercy and truth, and God was faithful when they would bring that. In His loving kindness, in His mercy, in His truth, and His truthfulness or His faithfulness, then God would offer atonement at that time and in His way. God is faithful. But while this is basic, while this is fundamental to who God is, the more and more that any individual goes further from God, the more and more that a nation goes farther and farther from God, there are reasons for that. And that's because there are some who doubt the mercy, the loving kindness. They doubt the truth and the faithfulness of God. And so while they still may have those words in their vocabulary of showing mercy and some things being true, that becomes separated from its source, becomes separated from God. And so there are those who doubt the mercy and truth of God. There are those who go beyond doubt and they outright deny, and YouTube is full of people who deny that God is a God of mercy and of truth. For other reasons, there are those who exaggerate the mercy of God, the faithfulness of God. The other extreme from that, there are those who neglect it or ignore it. And all of these have great consequences, of which I started to go into more, and then as I was working up my outline, I realized, well, nope, that's a whole lesson in and of itself. Let me put that on another piece of paper and just keep it to fewer words this morning. But think about all the consequences of someone who doubts God's mercy and God's truth, the confusion that goes along with. Well, I believe there is a God, and He says He's a God of mercy and truth, but how come a God of mercy and truth would let this happen? There's confusion and struggle and sadness that is unnecessary when the mercy and truth of God is doubted. Think of all of the lies and the insults that are spewed at God and that are believed about God because of the abundance of accusations made by those who deny the mercy and the truth of God. To those who go to the opposite extreme, could you really exaggerate the loving kindness and the faithfulness of God? Well, you could. If you say, well, God just, there's a religious group here, using that word loosely, here in Fairbanks. They're called the Unitarian Universalist Association or something like that. Key word there is universalist. They believe everybody is going to be saved. And so they emphasize, well, the love, the loving kindness, the faithfulness of God. He'll be faithful to everyone, so everybody will be saved. And so sin is not really as big of a problem as they would say, as the Bible or we say that it is. So there's unnecessary comfort when the faithfulness and the loving kindness of God is exaggerated, is misrepresented. And when the loving kindness and truth of God is neglected, then there's unnecessary guilt. And so you have people, sometimes even Christians, that, well, how they still cling to their sin and to their guilt, maybe, and don't move on and grow and leave the past in the past because not dwelling enough on and not thinking enough on the loving kindness and the faithfulness of God. If God forgives me, well, then surely I should be able to forgive me, as we say that. So go back to Psalm 100. And of all the noise, of all the confusion, of all the distraction from the mercy and the truth of God that is the result of all of man's reactions and responses to God and who He is, think about how these words may not calm and quiet and silence all the detractors, but Psalm 100 will, for us, it can for you, silence all that distraction. Let's just read these five verses. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before His presence with singing. Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter into His gates with thanksgiving and into His courts with praise. Be thankful to Him and bless His name, for the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting, and His truth endures to all generations. So tonight we'll look at the mercy and the truth of God in action and some of examples. We'll look at the Garden of Eden. What do we see in those familiar events that reflect this part of who God is? His loving kindness, His faithfulness, His mercy, His truth. And then we'll spend some time applying that to how these things ought to be evident in our lives if we bind them around our neck and write them on the tablets of our heart. We'll turn to number 359. And as we prepare and as we sing this song, think about how the mercy and the truth of God fits into the victory that this song is about, victory in Jesus. And that really goes back to even this proverb. In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity. We sing this song to remind all of us of the blessings that we have if we are in Christ. We sing this song to invite any who are here this morning who recognize the iniquity in your life, the sin that you have chosen and are guilty of. But if you think on the faithfulness of God, the kindness, the mercy, and the truth of God, then you'll seek atonement from Him, knowing that you can't just wish iniquity away. God has sent His Son, Jesus Christ, and His death and His resurrection offer the mercy and the truth of God and provide for us an atonement, a payment for our sin. You need only to seek that atonement from Him. If you need to confess your faith in Jesus as that atonement, with repentance in your heart, you can be baptized into Him. As we read earlier, as we're baptized into Christ, we're baptized into His death, and we're pardoned. If you seek that, or if as a Christian you need to appeal to that same sacrifice and atonement, and we can help and encourage you and stir you up to be faithful to Him as He is faithful to you, tell us how we can help. Come forward as we stand and sing.